basically starting advocating a point of view, which is the point of view of emergent gravity. So I want to discuss what lessons we may gather from an analog model of emergent gravity for what regards the cosmological constant. So I'm doing an exercise which is beyond the standard limit of analog gravity in the sense that normally analog gravity is the idea to look at linearized perturbation on fluid flows and to describe, you can show that the physics of this linearized perturbation basically corresponds to quantum field theory, can be in some situation described as quantum field theory in curved spacetime. Here I'm doing an extra thing. I'm looking at analog gravity as a toy model for emergent gravity. So I'm doing something non-orthodox from the analog gravity community point of view. So what we are going to discuss is the problem of the cosmological constant. I have many colleagues in cosmology that generally refer to the possible outcome of their measurement. Say if we are going to find that, the dark energy doesn't have any dependence on Z and so on, then it's going to be a vanilla universe where basically you get a boring cosmological constant. I take a completely different point of view. I think that that would be the most exciting result if the cosmological constant is indeed the cosmological, if dark energy is indeed a cosmological constant, because my point of view is that the cosmological constant may tell you a lot about the underlying theory of gravity. So in emergent gravity, basically working in a framework where you think that gravity is basically a large scale occurrence of the physics of more fundamental objects, which are not quanta of space-time, then I'm trying to argue that using an analog model, you can have a natural interpretation of the cosmological constant and of its smallness. So let me try reviewing a little bit a particular quantum system, which is very suitable to do for using doing analog gravity. So I'm talking about the standard Bose-Einstein condensate, something that we are able now to do in a lab with 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6 atoms, for example, rubidium atom. So something very concrete, something that we can do nowadays and manage very effectively. So you start basically from a linear Schrödinger equation. You have a bunch of self-interacting bosons. And how this has anything to do with gravity? Well, the way you see that this has something to do with gravity or is by doing basically an expansion with take basically the expectation value of the wave function in the ground state, where by ground state here I will denote the ground state of quasi-particle, when things of the collective excitation on the condensate, what in the linearized approximation you will call phonons. While there is a different vacuum, of course, in this game, which is the vacuum for the atoms. Of course, we are not in the vacuum for the atoms. We have 10 to the 5 atoms there. Okay, so consider this kind of expansion. You have the classical background, what is called the wave function of the condensate. You have an equation for that and an equation for the excitation. And then you have coupling terms, which are, if you like, the back reaction of the excitation on the background. These are called volume of the Jenner's equation. And you can simplify them by neglecting the back reaction. And let's see what happens if I consider the excitation. You can do a trick, which is called the quantum Madelungger representation, which is equivalent to do a kind of Bogoliubov transformation going from the atoms to the quasi-particles, basically to a set of creation and destruction operator that diagonalize your Hamiltonian. And what you get are the equation for the excitation. This seems complicated. They are two first-order equations. If you neglect this term, which is suppressed by h bar square, which is called the quantum potential, is related to the so-called quantum potential. You take these two first-order equations, you put them together, you get a second-order equation for the phase associated to the quantum excitation. And this is basically the propagation of a scalar field on a curved space-time. And the metric that is affecting this scalar field is a curved metric, which is related, is curved as a function of the background density and velocity. So note here that we started from a non-relativistic system. We arrived to a relativistic system for the quantum excitation that propagate on a curved background, right? So this is basically the core of analog gravity program, because now you can, for example, simulate a flow that provide you the analog of a black hole and look what the quantum excitation undoing in this flow. Of course, This is nothing special because a Bose-Einstein condensate can be seen as a superfluid in some approximation, and the excitation of a superfluid, which is non-viscous and irrotational, do propagate like scalar fields on a curved background. So then there was a lot of technology developed to this, and you know the complication, for example, when you want to deal with Hawking radiation, is that this perturbation, the quasi-particle, propagates relativistically only at low energy, but they have natural modification and Lorentz breaking at high energy, which is nothing, again, surprising, given that the underlying system is non-relativistic. So the characteristics of this quasi-particle at very high energy should be the non-relativistic one. And in fact, for kappa going to very large value beyond the mass of the atoms, you get basically E equal P squared over 2m, which is the dispersion relation for non-relativistic atoms. All of that, I say, can be generalized to a relativistic system of condensate atoms. It's called relativistic back. Then the limit would be to another relativity group, another special relativistic group with a different limit speed. So far, so good, nothing new. But now, what if I want to study gravity with this? Of course, the equation ruling the background is an equation that is not relativistic, and as such, this equation would not, can at most give you, if I'm asking, would the background feel the perturbation in a gravitation-like way? The answer is, at most, you can get the Poisson equation. You cannot for sure get the Einstein equation. But in order to get the Poisson equation, you need to give a mass to your particles. So one of the things we did in this work some years ago with Lorenzo Sindoni and Florian Girelli was to modify the initial equation, so to introduce a soft U1 breaking term. And this soft U1 breaking term here basically was giving for us a mass to the quasi-particle, making them from Gonston boson to pseudo-Gonston boson, if you like technical language. However, and these were the dispersion relations. So now we can we were in condition to ask what this, how this quasi-particle, massive quasi-particle, gravitate in this Bose-Einstein condensate. We wanted to see basically if we had a set of laws that could be cast in the familiar way. This is the most general Poisson equation you can write. This is if you have a short range gravity and if you have a cosmological constant. Well, to make a long story short, what we identified were basically how, what kind of perturbation were relevant in a, we were putting ourselves in an homogeneous and static condensate. And we identified what kind of perturbation were relevant as gravitational perturbation, what were the analog of gravitational perturbation, and these were perturbation in the density. And in order to identify the non-relativistic gravitational potential, we look at the non-relativistic Hamiltonian for the quasi-particle and see what was the term playing the role of the gravitational potential. Now that you have identified the gravitational potential, you can try to take the first of the Bogoliubov de Gennes equation and see if it can be written in this form. And indeed, this equation can be written in this form. This is the outcome. What here plays the role of raw matter is basically the energy density associated to real quasi-particle phonons living on the condensate. And a surprise. Here you have a long, short range scale, which was expected because in this system there is a scale that rules gravity and the range of gravity, which is the Hilly length of the condensate, which was the same scale that was ruling the breakdown of Lorentz invariance. In the talk by Lorenzo Sindoni, the generalization of the system to multi-species will tell you something more about the possibility to get something closer to the standard Poisson equation. The surprise was that automatically we got also a cosmological constant. And what is this cosmological constant in the case of the Bose-Einstein condensate? I already told you that the vacuum for atoms is not equivalent to the vacuum for the quasi-particle. If you live in the ground state of the quasi-particles, you always have a bunch of atoms which are not in the, in the ground state and they are not part of the condensate. This is what is called the depletion factor in condensed matter jargon. You have a gas of atoms excited above the condensate, and this has to be there just by quantum mechanics. It's unavoidable. And this part that is there is as small as the diluteness factor of the condensate. That means rho times the scattering length cube. So if the condensate, as it is in this system, is very dilute, you have a very small amount of atoms out of the condensation. And this is what is ruling lambda. You also have an emergent Newton constant. Take note of that. The Newton constant is not a fundamental constant, but is a combination of the fundamental parameters of the initial nonlinear Schrödinger equation. So regarding the role of vacuum in this condensed matter analog, there was a series of papers by Grisha Volovic that was really pointing out that the vacuum in this system is not what you would naively expect. The energy of the vacuum cannot be computed for sure in the standard way because the phonons are not capturing all of the degrees of freedom of the system. And in reality, the true energy of a condensed matter system has to be computed with a grand canonical Hamiltonian, with expectation value in the quasi-particle vacuum state of the grand canonical Hamiltonian. But if you do that and use the Gibbs 12 relation, you find automatically that the energy of the vacuum is minus P. So his argument was that somehow the energy of the vacuum A is wrong to compute it today as a cutoff sum over the energy of the phonons, which is what we would be doing when we say that there is a cosmological problem. And B, in a condensed matter system, this is the right formula and gives you automatically as a byproduct this interesting relation. Right. But is our lambda that anything that has to do with this energy then? Now we have a test field, a model that where concretely we can compute what is gravitating in the analog of the gravitational equation. So let's see what it is. And if you do your calculation, you find out that this is the eigenvalue of the grand canonical Hamiltonian, this is the eigenvalue of the Hamiltonian, and none of them are corresponding to our cosmological constant, which we can compute exactly. So what is this cosmological constant? First of all, this cosmological constant, if you like, is more related to the subleading terms here. Here in this energy, there is always a leading term that, if you like, is related to the energy stored in the atoms, which are part of the condensate. That doesn't gravitate in our equation. It's only the subleading part. And so this one is of the order of this subleading part, but it's not exactly that neither. So what's going on here? Well, first of all, let me do an exercise. So once we have clarified that this is giving you immediately a lesson, no? That in order to compute what is the cosmological constant in an emergent gravity system, you better have a way to emerge your analog of the Einstein equation. Because without that, you cannot predict so easily what is going to gravitate in your equation. So arguments which are just based on the underlying structure are risky in a certain sense. So this is one first lesson. The other one, I want to show you the relation between the energy in this cosmological constant and the energy in the emerging Planck constant. If you take the ratio, you see that this number can be extremely small due to this dilution factor here, which has to be much less than one in order for the whole analogy to work. What is teaching you here? That the cosmological constant can be indeed much smaller than the Planck scale in this emergent system, and has to do basically to the fact that the indetermination of the cosmological constant enters basically the diluteness of the fundamental constituents, or if you want, the strength of their interaction. But then from an effectivity theory point of view, you may wonder, wait a second, you have a system which has a characteristic scale. Your effective field theory for the Bose-Einstein condensate has a characteristic scale, which is the Hilling length. So why this cosmological constant isn't just of the order of the Hilling length? And in fact, it is of the order of the Hilling length. So the cosmological constant here is of the order of the fundamental scale of your effective field theory. From this point of view, it's not telling you that there is something. What is the problem when you ask if this is a big or large or small cosmological constant? That we always say it with respect to the Planck scale. What is really non-fundamental here is the Planck scale. It's G Newton. So you shouldn't ask yourself why the cosmological constant is so small with respect to the Planck scale. The problem is, if you like, is the hierarchy scale. Why the Planck scale is so large? So from this point of view, it is interesting because it's suggesting you a possible resolution in emergent gravity models of the cosmological constant problem. Because you may say, if I built up a theory where you have an effective field theory scale and an expected small scale in the gravitational, pure gravitational sector, and I have a way to emerge the Newton constant as well, then, which is a very small, like we measure today, then I have automatically a system which would start to predict a small cosmological constant. In this sense, I find very intriguing the proposal by Pospel of Shang, which were trying to address the naturalness problem as posed by Daniel before, by showing that the system which has violation only in the gravitational sector and not in matter at the three level, but in which the violation of Lorentz symmetry in the gravitational sector happen at a very small scale, can still pass the loose constraint we have on Lorentz violation purely on the gravitational sector, but at the same time, given the ratio with which the Lorentz violation will percolate in the matter sector is ruled by ratio between the scale of Lorentz violation and the Planck scale. If the Planck scale is much higher than the scale of Lorentz violation in the gravity sector, then you have a natural suppression of this term, and at least for the lowest order operator, you are fine. In this sense, this work seems to suggest that if you have an emergent gravity system where the Planck scale, the emergent Planck scale, is very large with respect to the natural effective field theory scale that would rule also the cosmological constant, then you may be on the right track to have an explanation of the smallness of this cosmological constant. So I made my conclusion. I think it was what I presented you is just a toy model. It's a toy model that doesn't reproduce the standard Poisson equation because it's very simple. We have just one class of particle. It is at the core an emergent gravity model, and it's basically telling you that whenever you say predict the cosmological constant from emergent gravity, better if you have your Einstein equation to say what is the cosmological constant. B, that the smallness of the cosmological constant can be maybe translated in a problem about why the Planck scale is so high. And I thank you for the attention.
Okay, any questions? John?
We have two equations, one for T sub n and one for m, involving that little m.
Let me see the equation because I'm not sure what equation you're referring.
Equation for
T sub n.
For? Newton's constant.
Yes.
That's an equation.
This one, you mean?
And you also have an equation for lambda.
Yes.
Can you satisfy both at the same time?
Yes, this system does. We have checked the number of, you mean, for example, if the same parameter. It's not a matter of satisfying. These are the definition of what appears here and here. Just starting from the microscopic system. You have a bound, for example, that mu plus 2m should be greater than 1, for example, for the system to be well-behaving. But these are really definition. It's really you identify what appears as a constant there, and you call it the analog of the cosmological constant. And here is the coupling constant of this rho matter, which is defined basically looking at this localized bunch of phonons.
I have some questions. Is this, it looks like a weak pair approximation for the static solution of some massive gravity theory. Is this related to the Gabalaxy theory? In some
to sense? What?
Gabalaxy or...
No, I don't think so, because first of all, here you derive, in a certain sense, the theory of gravity, the fact that you have a theory like this, imagine basically from your starting equation, and your starting equation is this. The equation for the background. So the trick, what we did really, was to identify here what was playing the role of the gravitational potential. You are in a static situation, so this goes to zero. And then this back reaction term is what gives you basically the right-hand side of the Poisson equation. But here there are both real phonons contribution that depletion factor, vacuum contribution.
So I have a question about the sign of the cosmological constant.
It's negative.
Right, so this is quite in agreement with recent results from string theory that says that you cannot get consider space. Or
right.
Two plus one dimensional gravity.
It's also what you get in Orava gravity, this negative cosmological constant. Yeah.
You get in observation.
But you see, sorry? No, but all right, but you don't get even short range gravity in observation. I never said that this is a model of the cosmology. For example, I cannot address with this model the coincidence problem, for example, because it's completely static. It's a situation where you just are trying to identify what it would be in a system like this, the origin of the cosmological constant. But I agree with you, it's negative. And actually, I wonder if there is something general behind it, you know?
I think there is. I think this indicates that the superspace is really unstable.
I see your point, yeah.
Sorry, here is the first.
Yeah, no, that's a more general question. Usually, as you said in your talk, the zero-point energy are the responsible for the cosmological constant.
Right.
But if we think to a quantum gravity calculation, I could try to use another regulator, dimensional regularization, Pauli-Villars, so another things, and or proper time regulator. And this idea that the zero-point energy, goes to the cosmological constant makes no sense completely in this frame.
But in fact, I'm not using that.
No.
I'm just doing an initial calculation. I was citing that calculation only on the second sample of the standard reasoning. So you're attacking the standard reasoning, but I'm not...
This argument, what gravitates? What are the things?
I'm just looking at what gravitates.
Is going to be what gravitates, not what is some energy that you don't know what role it plays. And I think that is correct.
Can I add a comment to what you just said?
Sorry, there was
the
question.
That was related to that.
Oh, okay. So then, it's you.
Oh, I just want to see if you agree that this talk, very nice observation, contributes to the other discussion we read today, or I promoted today, which is effective theory, which is our current paradigm. But then when you try it and it doesn't answer, or it gives naturalness problems, I don't see anything to learn in it. And this is, I think, a beautiful example. I mean, the cosmological constant is unnatural by 80 orders of magnitude. Then if you go beyond the current paradigm, and you just went one step beyond, it can be...
In a certain sense, it's yes and no, the answer to your question, because what there is beyond in this toy model is still a form of effective field theory,
sure.
Because you're looking at the atoms and effective field theory.
You don't know any better,
right.
But it is a way to create...
There is a small number in the game, the dilution factor, that you wouldn't have predicted easily with the effective field theory of the phonons. You see, the problem is that here there are these two effective field theory consistent, they are related. And the small number that is explaining why the cosmological constant is so small is something that you cannot predict from the effective field theory of the phonon.
Is there anything in the emergent scenario that actually drives it? You know, can you think of a phenomenon so that the dilution factor is actually driven down? Because if not, it's a tuning in a certain sense.
There is, yeah. The answer I have to that is that normally, you see, these are experiments. And you need a dilution factor to be very small, because otherwise the theory is strongly interacting. And the strongly interacting underlying theory spoils completely the analogy. So I cannot answer you that in this system there is something that drives it down. But I would say that whenever you were going to build a theory of emergent gravity, somehow my gut feeling is that this... there should be something analogous to this dilutiveness in the BEC that makes the underlying theory extremely simple from a point of view of the nearest neighbor interaction. Because that dilutiveness is what allows you to say that are relevant only the nearest neighbor interaction. Otherwise, you have three atoms, four atoms interaction, and they completely spoil the geometrical analogy. So it may be that this dilutiveness is crucial in a certain sense in the possibility to emerge space-time. At this stand, as it stands, of course, if you can try to build the model with a large dilution factor, but then you wouldn't have even the analog gravity and the emerging metric at all.
But then also the coupling constant is important, right? Because how many terms you're going to take into
right.
Depends on what's the value of your
of course.
Fundamental coupling.
And there is one just, yes, if you can, there is only one comment to Robert, that if you change, you can make the cosmological constant positive by changing the coupling constant between the atoms, kappa, with my equation, but then the system is unstable. the condensate explodes.
Okay, I'm sorry, but we will have to keep the discussion afterward because we have one more talk in this session. And it's Lorenzo.